Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, October 6th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Samantha Liney Perfoss.
As the Major League Baseball playoffs begin, go Red Sox, we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the majesty of a once-in-a-century player. Japan's Shohei Ohtani is the first true two-way player in U.S. baseball since Babe Ruth. Like Ruth, Mr. Ohtani has challenged the concept of sports specialization and redefined the limits of what's humanly possible. Mr. Ohtani didn't just hit and pitch for an entire season. In 2021, he was an elite starting pitcher and elite batter. He's pulled off the most amazing season in baseball history, wrote Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated. Mr. Ohtani's team, the Los Angeles Angels, didn't make the playoffs, but he's in the running for both the American League's Most Valuable Player and the Cy Young Award as the best pitcher. He swings with power and pitches with finesse, and he's among the league's fastest base runners. Mr. Ohtani finished third in home runs, 46. By the end of August, he had hit the most homers 430 feet or more, 15. On the mound, he throws five different pitches, and his fastball gets even faster later in the game. Mr. Ohtani's split-finger fastball is the best pitch ever thrown in terms of effectiveness against batters, according to Baseball Savant. Yet, one of baseball's top aces, Max Scherzer, says Mr. Ohtani is still developing as a pitcher. In August, Mr. Ohtani agreed, "I'm getting better each outing, and I still haven't hit my potential yet." Baseball fans can't wait to see what Mr. Ohtani does next season. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Our reporter examines the global supply chain problem through the eyes of three key players who offer ways it might be fixed.
Los Angeles and Long Beach ports, combined, move more than 40% of all cargo containers entering the United States. The complex has become a critical choke point in a tangled global web of shortages and shipping troubles, affecting everything from toilet paper, again, to auto parts. Questions about how to bolster supply chains go beyond the pandemic and its effects, says Dan Bresnitz, who co-directs an innovation policy lab at the University of Toronto. Even once the current backlog is resolved, the challenge of managing risk in supply chains remains, especially amid worries about over-reliance on imports from China. Professor Bresnitz says, "I think we have a serious problem with the way we produce stuff, and I don't think this is going away." To unravel what's happening, the Monitor visited with three human links in the LA supply chain: the director of ship traffic control for Southern California, a harbor trucker, and a toy store retailer. The challenges range from a line of waiting ships to a pileup of empty containers clogging the port. For now, retailer Christina Mullen is putting the best face on it. Looking afresh for alternative toy vendors in the U.S., she says, "It's an opportunity to sometimes try something new." This story was reported by Francine Kiefer in Los Angeles for The Monitor.
As Germany forms a new center-left government, our columnist writes, a key question in Europe and the U.S. is whether progressive leadership can effectively deliver on its vision and regain voter trust.
From Germany to Britain to the United States, political leaders who tack left of center face two common challenges. One is discerning what's politically possible for their ambitious social, economic, and environmental agendas. The other, closely linked to the first, is establishing popular trust that the government can deliver. The stakes are high. The political climate is unsettled, and the bond between voters and mainstream political parties is frayed. Without this bedrock of trust, any change agenda becomes more difficult. In all three countries, these leaders are staking out common ground. Germany, Social Democratic Party leader Olaf Scholz, the surprise frontrunner to replace Chancellor Angela Merkel, positioned himself as a progressive pragmatist able to deliver change and stability. In the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer, leader of the opposition Labour Party, drew sharp heckling from far-left members at a recent party conference. Yet his retort to loud applause was, "Should we be shouting slogans or changing lives?" In Washington, President Joe Biden is trying to push his far-reaching infrastructure and reconciliation bills through Congress. If he can demonstrate that government actually can change lives, he might have made a start on achieving something of potentially deeper importance, restoring trust and the bond between government and the governed. This column was written by Ned Temko in London for The Monitor.
A core democratic value is giving voice to the minority. The election of visible minorities to Norway's top political positions signals a stronger, more diversified, and representative democracy. We look at how that's happening.
Shazia Majid, a Norwegian-Pakistani investigative journalist, is thrilled by the history-making composition of Norway's new parliament. 11 out of the 169 lawmakers elected last month represent visible minorities, and immigrants are now represented roughly in proportion to their fraction of the eligible voting population. Ms. Majid says, "Every community needs to be represented among lawmakers in any country. This is a case of Norway giving opportunities, and kids of immigrants grabbing those opportunities with both hands." Some see in this class of politicians evidence of a gradual and subtle shift in what it means to be Norwegian, a sign the nation is coming into its own as a multicultural society. Visible minorities are relatively new in Norway. The country characterized the guest workers that began arriving in the 1970s from Pakistan, India, Morocco, and Turkey as, quote, alien workers. Migrant communities grew over the years, especially in the capital, Oslo, where one in three residents today are of migrant background. Ms. Majid still remembers when the first politician with a migrant background entered Norwegian Parliament in 2001. It dawned on her then that anyone could reach the highest positions of power. "That is why representation is so important," she says. The story was reported by Line Tiller in Oslo, Norway, and Dominique Sogel in Basel, Switzerland, for The Monitor.
One man's vision to make his African city more resilient to climate change was severely tested in a 2019 cyclone. But our reporter found that the fortification and beautification of this city continues.
When Cyclone Idai ripped through central Mozambique in March 2019, it was a brutal setback for the coastal city of Beira. Its mayor had worked for years with international donors to prepare the city's flood defenses. Beira had started building a waterfront park and added water retention basins to handle floodwaters during cyclones and other extreme weather events. The cyclone killed at least 598 people in Mozambique, and more than 130,000 had to flee their homes. But the preparation in Beira hadn't all been in vain. The city's new drainage canals reduced flooding in some neighborhoods and allowed residents to move back to their homes. Since then, money and expertise have poured into Mozambique after donors pledged $1.2 billion for post-cyclone recovery. Some projects have yet to break ground, but others are starting to improve the city's defenses against heightened climate-related risks in the future. The hope is that by making Beira more resilient, cities in other developing countries can learn from its example. And the waterfront park is finally open to the public. This was the brainchild of the mayor, says Bonche Marie Sangerling of the World Bank. He used to tell us stories of how for decades the area along the river was dilapidated, always flooded, and crime-ridden. Transforming it was a really important dream of his. The story was reported by Cesar Gotoma in Beira, Mozambique, and Ryan Lenora Brown in Johannesburg for The Monitor.
A photographer's latest book seeks to close the widening gaps of inequality and misunderstanding by helping Silicon Valley neighbors to see one another more fully and empathetically.
Silicon Valley conjures images of high-tech millionaires living like modern-day kings. The reality, as photographer Mary Beth Meehan depicts in the book Seeing Silicon Valley, Life Inside a Fraying America, is strikingly different. The dominant narrative about a utopia obscures how life is actually lived and what it means to be a human being there, Meehan says. Silicon Valley is a microcosm of the broader inequality that divides the nation, according to Meehan. The effects are felt not just economically, but socially. People are living right next to each other, and they don't interact, she says. To counter this separation, the photographer created portraits that encourage viewers to go beyond stereotypes to see the people who make up this amorphous place known as Silicon Valley. The result is a book of images that speaks to the human toll exacted by the relentless economy. This latest effort follows a series of Meehan's community portrait projects in Massachusetts, Georgia, and Rhode Island. I'm interested in all the ways that we see each other incorrectly and how photography can push against that, she says. This book review was written by April Austin for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on stability in Libya. A year ago, Libya was a failed state, split by warring factions serving as pawns in a proxy war between Turkey and Russia. The country, liberated from a dictator a decade ago during the Arab Spring, had descended into violent chaos, much like that in Syria and Yemen. National reconciliation seemed like a desert mirage. Yet, on October 5th, a major construction and building trade fair opened in the capital, Tripoli. Hundreds of exhibitors and thousands of attendees from around the world gathered in anticipation of the North African state becoming stable enough for mass investment. The day before, the country's new unity government said construction had begun on an oil refinery. These were signs that the stigma of a failed state is lifting After a January 12 ceasefire between major warring parties. What's changed for Libya is that a peace process, shepherded by the United Nations and a few European leaders, has begun to take hold. Reconciliation among Libya's 20 major tribal lines and between rival leaders in the East and West is still far off, but the pieces of peace are falling into place. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about why allowing midwives to work in Afghanistan is now a key test of whether Taliban principles have evolved since they last ruled. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how recognizing that God's grace is universal, impartial, and inexhaustible affords the opportunity to prove that chronic lack is not a given. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Tim Malone, Jeff Turton, and Tara Adhikari.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.